Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It's Wednesday, September 7th. What happens when it's too hot to turn on the air conditioner? We start here. A California heat wave is threatening the state's energy grid.
The grid is made to flex. The grid is not made to flex to this level.
It's also threatening lives. Now state officials have resorted to begging. The UK gets a Brentrance.
I'm honored to take on this responsibility at a vital time for our country.
A new prime minister is less than a day on the job, so why are Brits already nervous? And $500 million gone like a puff of smoke.
The attorneys general said their marketing was aimed at people who were too young under law to use their products.
Could a new settlement from Juul prevent kids from getting hooked, or is this just sour vapes? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. Degrees does not sound particularly hot. I grew up in California, where it could go way higher than 80 during the day, but the thing was, it always cooled down at night. We didn't have air conditioning at my house, because you just open up the window and let that cooler air do its job. Well now, for the second straight week in California, the heat has become unrelenting.
We're just making sure we stay hydrated. We have a pool over there, lots of water.
I can never remember being this hot. Triple digits, you take the dogs out for a walk at 8, and it's already stifling.
To the point where the overnight low is often failing to drop below that 80-degree mark. And when that happens, 80 degrees can start to become deadly. And even if you have AC or you have the resources it takes to deal with this heat, what would happen if you didn't have any electricity?
This morning, there are concerns California's power supply may not be enough to meet demand in the state.
We're heading to the worst part of this heat wave, and the risk for outages is real, and it's immediate.
That is the conundrum facing a lot of people in the western part of the country right now as these high temperatures lead to the energy grid becoming overloaded. Let's start the day with ABC's chief meteorologist, Ginger Z. She's also the managing editor of our climate unit. And Ginger, can you just put this heat wave in perspective for us? How bad has it become there?
Right. When we're talking about 2 weeks straight of seeing breaking records, not just daily records, because you'll often see that, oh, a record was broken. Well, that's for the day. We're talking about all-time September records. Mm. So the hottest temperature these cities like Salt Lake City, Grand Junction, Colorado, Sacramento, California have ever seen.
It feels good when you're home in the air conditioning room, and it feels like an oven when you step out.
110, 111, 108, 106, scorching.
And this is something that keeps becoming cumulative, not just overnight, like you talked about, which is actually one of the best ways that we can associate climate change is when the overnight lows also are remarkably warmer, but also then the highs. And so on a day like today, I keep asking and I'm looking on the, you know, refreshing the browser because I want to know, does Sacramento break the all-time September heat record that it just set again yesterday? And that's when you know that we are in something unique.
Hey, One of the biggest stories this week is becoming not just the heat of California, but also energy consumption in California. How much pressure does a heat wave like this put on the grid?
The grid is made to flex. The grid is not made to flex to this level.
These triple-digit temperatures throughout much of our state are leading, not surprisingly, to record demand on the energy grid.
When it gets hotter, people make it colder. And so if you have a family that says regularly they leave it at 72, say, or whatever their kind of given temperature, a lot of people go colder than that. When you start having people that wouldn't normally drop it to 70 to try to cool off from where their body has been stressed from the day and exposed to this heat, that starts to stress the grid.
And today and tomorrow afternoon after 4 p.m., in particular 4 p.m., please turn your thermostat up to 78 degrees or higher and avoid, to the extent possible, using any really large appliances.
Overnight, California power officials did expect their top emergency level to be hit. And yes, they had their highest demand ever.
CAISO issued an emergency energy alert level 2. That's the stage before utilities are told to cut power.
Current capacity for California's grid is more than 57,000 megawatts. They were well over 50,000.
Wow.
The forecasted peak is anticipated to come down just a bit today, but it's still one of those situations where if everybody turned up their AC to 78 and just took it down in the peak hours from 4 to 9 p.m., that would have huge implications on saving themselves from future brownouts or blackouts.
I mean, the power grid is already taxed, and then you're going to put greater demand, significantly greater demand on it by having all electric cars. You know, I don't see that as a recipe for success, personally.
And what was ironic to me, Ginger, is like the last segment we did on about California and climate was because California had just announced that in the coming years, you won't be able to buy a new gas-powered vehicle there. Like, electric vehicles are the way forward. And yet, on some of these super hot days, Californians have recently been asked not to charge their electric vehicles because of the grid concerns. So, like, I get electricity is supposed to prevent future heat waves, but if our current heat waves require more electricity than we have, what do you do?
So I thought that was an interesting ask. It felt, yes, they're big consumers of it, but there aren't a lot of people with them yet. But also the other two key components that actually came first, and that was put your temperature up to 78 and do all non-essential like dishwashing, you know, dryers and those things that are huge consumers of electricity in our homes in the off-peak hours if you must. And then for those with electric cars, try not to charge. For example, Los Angeles, only 5% of homes have level 2 chargers. So you're talking about a very small amount of population when more than 82% of folks that live in Los Angeles have air conditioning.
And for now, industry leaders say battery-powered DC fast charging stations are the best bet because they don't pull from the grid.
Now we are entering a different climate. Everyone is warming, some places faster than others. So you're going to need new infrastructure, not just in schools, not just in homes, but that can handle the load of conditioning the air that will be meeting us in the coming decades.
All right, Ginger Z, thank you so much.
Sure.
Next up on Start Here, you want to talk about energy prices. They could decide whether Britain's new leader gets to keep her job. Meet 10 Downing's newest tenant after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/starthere today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/starthere. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there should be no compromise. Don't go back to that one doctor. You know the type. Like, I've had this person before that doesn't actually listen to you or who seems just in a rush to end your appointment that you spent months making. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You can search by location, availability, and insurance, so no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you got more options than you know. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. Go to ZocDoc.com/start here and download the ZocDoc app for free, then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/start here. ZocDoc.com/start here.
job of a prime minister in difficult circumstances when he's been handed a colossal mandate is to keep going.
For months in the UK, there was this will he or won't he surrounding Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Would he resign? Well, finally, amid daunting pressure in his own party, he stepped down. At least, he promised he would step down.
It is clearly now the will of the Parliamentary Conservative Party that there should be a new leader of that party and therefore a new prime minister.
For almost 2 months following that, though, Johnson remained officially the country's leader. Well, that finally changed yesterday as the United Kingdom officially got a new prime minister.
I'm honoured to take on this responsibility at a vital time for our country.
ABC's foreign correspondent James Longman is in London. James, who is Liz Truss and how did she become prime minister?
I mean, Brad, I think that's a question a lot of Brits are asking, apart from anything else, to be honest with you. She became prime minister because Boris Johnson agreed to step down earlier this summer. And then there was a leadership contest that I'm told lasted 8 weeks, but it feels like it lasted half of my life. It's lasted for a long time. And basically anybody who was anybody ran from among the Conservative Party, the lawmakers who sit in the Houses of Parliament.
Therefore, I give notice that Liz Truss is elected as the leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party.
Liz Truss was seen as the kind of right-wing Johnson loyalist who had been kind of sitting under the radar for the last decade or so. I mean, she served in successive Conservative governments as various different kinds of minister, different kinds of portfolios, but very much a darling of the right. And she is now going to be Prime Minister.
We will transform Britain into an aspiration nation with high-paying jobs, safe streets, and where everyone, everywhere has the opportunities they deserve.
I think it's fair to say she was no one's first choice and she was no one's last choice. So really, she's a bit of a, for want of a better phrase, non-entity in British politics. She has been until now. I mean, she was Foreign Secretary until very recently. So she's tried to burnish her credentials by saying, you know, she was on the front foot over Ukraine. But really, you know, she was elected to Parliament in 2010 and she's had a bit of a checkered history, you know, all kinds of political views she's had over the years. And that's why people have, you know, her critics would say she's a bit of an opportunist.
Because I believe, like most Liberal Democrats, in democracy. Democracy with a capital D.
I mean, she started out in left-wing firebrand student politics when she was much younger. She advocated for abolishing the monarchy. She campaigned against nuclear power. And then slowly seemed to have moved further to the right, joined the Conservative Party, actually campaigned for Remain in the referendum, but has since become a massive Brexiteer.
It's important to note that Brexit-supporting parties got over 50% of the vote.
So it's very unclear, I think, to most people what she really stands for, but she now has the chance to really, you know, make her mark. She keeps talking about wanting to make bold change. It's unclear what that change will actually be, but we're all waiting in Britain to find out what kind of prime minister she will be.
Well, yeah, and I'm trying to figure out what changes would she make. Like, if she's from Boris Johnson's party, and Boris Johnson and his party have effectively become more and more unpopular, does that mean, by extension, she's unpopular? Like, how effective can you be if everything seems to be in disarray?
Yeah, that's exactly the big question. And over the last 8 weeks of this leadership campaign, we've basically had candidates tell each other what they would do to fix the enormous mess in this country. And the whole of Britain has been sitting on the sidelines sort of saying, well, hang on a minute, your party's been in power for 12 years. What exactly is it that you've been doing?
Are
you going to do anything about the ambulances waiting and the people dying out? Well, don't you think 12 years is long enough?
We have a health system which is in disarray, people waiting 40 hours for ambulances. People are now seeing, you know, a lot of our services, people are going on strike because there's labour shortages and people aren't being paid enough. Our utilities aren't working properly, so sewage is being pumped out into the sea. We have an issue around Brexit not really being sorted properly, so prices are going up and a massive cost of living crisis.
I have people coming up to me extremely fearful whether they can heat their homes, whether they can put food on the table.
table. We have the winter coming, which is going to be this huge issue right across the country.
People's energy bills are absolutely exploding. So all these things were part of the leadership contest. So a lot of people were sort of left there thinking, well, what is it exactly the Tories have done for the last 12 years? Well, Liz Truss will say that, you know, she's been a team player, but actually, deep down, she's wanted to do things differently than all the other people that have gone before her.
But what it takes is it takes political leadership, and it takes a prime minister that makes that happen.
She's all about small government. She's all about cutting taxes and growing the economy. She keeps repeating this phrase, bold action to grow the economy. Deliver, deliver, deliver. She said the word deliver so many times in her speeches that you think she's actually just going to end up as a mailman, because, I mean, the number of times she uses this phrase, no one's actually quite clear what it is that she's going to deliver, but that's what she keeps saying.
By delivering on the economy, on energy, and on the NHS, we will put our nation on the path to long-term success.
There are many waiting in the wings to see what exactly it is that Liz Truss does and how she fares. Most people say the next 2 weeks will define her premiership. If she manages to solve, quote-unquote, solve the energy crisis, she'll be safe. If inflation starts to rocket, if energy bills double, quadruple, triple, if people start to have to make choices between heating and eating, which is very much a possibility this winter in the United Kingdom, then her premiership could be doomed.
I will be supporting Liz Truss and the new government every step of the way.
I think someone that a lot of people are watching, and I think especially Liz Truss's team are watching, is Boris Johnson. What's he going to do? Because he remains the most popular politician in Britain.
Wait, Boris would make a comeback, you're saying?
It's not to be ruled out. Possibly not before the next general election. Huh. But here's the thing, Brad. This is what, you know, the Machiavellian, you know, politics of Britain. This is where some people are at.
He thinks he can come back. There are enough people in his own party that probably would like him to come back.
Could Boris have backed Liz Truss, knowing full well that she might not grab everyone's imaginations, allow her to fail at the next election, put the Conservative Party back into opposition, and then Boris Johnson rides back on a white horse and saves the day and brings the Conservatives back into power? That is very much a real possibility.
Like Cincinnatus, I am returning to my plan.
You just have to look at the speech Boris Johnson gave yesterday morning outside Parliament. He quoted Cincinnatus. He was a Roman senator. He likes his little Latin kind of references. Cincinnatus was a Roman senator who served kind of honourably in the Roman Senate and then withdrew from public life because he didn't want to be seen to be grabbing power. But he returned about a decade later, and that's a little hint that he's given in his very Boris Johnsonian way that he may well be back in the future. So watch this space.
Wow, talk about not much time on the job to like ease into it. I saw one British commentator saying, you know, the Queen officially shakes your hand to make you Prime Minister. This was her 15th handshake she's done in her life. And that same person said there could be a 16th really quick. We'll see how this tough job goes. James Longman, thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
I was watching TV the other day, and one of those anti-smoking ads came on from the nonprofit group called the Truth Initiative.
I help create a vape that makes depression convenient.
One of those in-your-face ads telling you the harmful effects of smoking.
Nicotine can amplify depression and anxiety, so I'm trying to sell some depression.
But what's interesting is that most of these ads are no longer about cigarettes. They're almost entirely about teen vaping. According to the National Institute of Health, one out of three high school seniors say they have vaped nicotine at least once in the last year. One of the most popular vaping products, of course, is Juul. But yesterday, potential litigation against Juul came to an end with a settlement worth nearly $500 million. ABC's Aaron Kaczorski has been covering this. Aaron, this was like a sweeping investigation representing 30-something states, right?
Yeah, Brad, 33 states in Puerto Rico, and it lasted 2 years. And in that time, the state attorneys general of those states found that Juul fueled the teenage vaping crisis in this country. As one attorney general put it, Juul pushed an entire generation toward e-cigarette use and nicotine addiction by marketing specifically to young people.
They didn't focus on television, print, radio, traditional media that gets at people like us, right, with some gray hair. What they did was they focused on other outlets, including Instagram and TikTok.
How do they do it? Well, with social media posts, by being all over Instagram and all the trendy social media sites, by hiring models who look the part, and by even at times underwriting educational programs at the nation's schools.
They had these launch parties. They used images, technology, trendy images, technology-based images. They used young and trendy-looking models. Everything was sleek and technology-focused.
So Juul was everywhere. And the attorneys general said their marketing was aimed at people who were too young under law to use their products.
Well, and so according to the terms of the settlement, what does Juul have to do now? Like, they write a check, I assume, but is there more?
There's more. They're going to have to write a check, and it's a big check, $438 million, and it could be even more than that. That's spread out over 10 years, and it's spread out to these 34 states that can use the money to help mitigate the vaping crisis and help with programs to get kids off of this stuff.
Juul has turned a generation of our young youth, our adolescents, into addicts.
And Brad, the settlement means that the company can no longer market to youth. That means they cannot use anyone under 35 in their marketing and advertising campaigns. They cannot promote or underwrite any programs in schools.
It appears that far more new smokers are created by way of vaping than adult smokers quitting because of vaping.
And they have to stop making what the attorneys general called the specious claim that Juul products actually helped people kick the real cigarette habit, that it was better to vape than to smoke. The FDA said that that wasn't necessarily the case, or at least there wasn't enough evidence of that. And Juul characterized this settlement as a way to move forward, even though they do not admit any specific wrongdoing as part of it.
Yeah, and you mentioned the marketing. They're actually no longer allowed to pay influencers, which kind of demonstrates what the modern marketing of vape products has become. Juul, of course, would say they were never trying to market to kids in the first place. So I guess I'm wondering, Aaron, what is next for this industry and what is next for the future of kids and vaping?
Brad, the FDA had already tried to revoke Juul's ability to market its products in the United States, but Juul received something of a reprieve from the court, and they're trying to make that permanent.
I'm under no illusions and cannot claim that it will stop youth vaping. It continues to be an epidemic. It continues to be a huge problem.
So it seems as if Juul products are going to be available for the foreseeable future. And the attorneys general say they just want to make sure they're kept away from kids who are too young to actually use them.
45% of the followers of Juul's Twitter account are between the ages of 13 and 17. Only 20% are older than 21. Think about that. Fully half of their Twitter followers are people that should not be using their products, that cannot use their products.
And the attorneys general said Juul's packaging was misleading in that it did not clearly disclose that it contained nicotine and implied it contained a lower concentration of nicotine than it actually did.
Yeah, and Juul says the marketing ban from the FDA was wrongly decided in the first place. They're still actively appealing that. Actually, you mentioned how long this investigation was. Well, during the course of it, Juul actually stopped becoming the number one choice of teens. Apparently, that title now belongs to Puff Bar. Again, another company that says it does not market to underage people, but the dollars there continue to flow. Aaron Katursky, thank you.
Thank you, Brett.
All right, one more quick break. When we come back, I'd like to buy a laser. One last thing is next.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
And one last thing. If there's one thing that's been a consonant, I mean constant, in this country, it's the show they call America's Game. Wheel of Fortune is about to begin its 40th season. In all that time, not much has changed, right?
Ladies and gentlemen, Pat Sajak and Vanna White.
Well, this year, they're changing the board. Yeah, the thing with the letters.
500.
M.
You got it. Two M's.
And if we know two things about Wheel of Fortune, it's one, you should buy vowels early, and two, it doesn't change very often.
has three sides here.
Uh-huh.
There's the green side.
So it's a tri-sided device.
Yes, it is. And
up until 1997, Vanna White had to physically turn every letter. For the last 25 years, the board has been made up of about 50 separate monitors, each of them with their own touch-sensitive frame. Actually, I didn't know this. If Vanna touched the middle of the screen, nothing would happen. You had to hit the edges. But this week, Vanna took ABC's own Veronica Miracle on a tour of the new big board, which is now operated by lasers.
See, it works. There's a laser, and I can run my hand over it. I don't even have to touch it.
Instead of all those individual monitors, Wheel wanted to use one huge screen. But how would it know which box Vanna was about to touch? Well, using LIDAR, the same technology used by archaeologists and even the Mars rover, laser beams now hover right over each box. Of course, that raises the question, what if Vanna reaches for one letter, but her hand crosses the laser beam early?
Right. Now it's a flat screen. Oh, see?
Unlike the old letter turning system, computer programming should prevent her from accidentally giving away any clues, which Pat Sajak actually did once.
I'd rather be standing here than there, frankly.
Did you catch that? That was him saying quite frankly on a puzzle where the answer was, you guessed it, quite frankly.
But it goes to show you that people are concentrating and they're not paying any attention to me.
Although if you guessed it, the player unfortunately did not, putting the humans in charge for just a little while longer. The day Vanna White goes, I'm done. Like, you can tell me she's ancillary. I'm not buying that for a minute. Girl is the show. Start here tomorrow. If you're enjoying what you're hearing, hit us up with a rating and review. It does really help us out. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.